about the meat. Remember, they wanted meat, and then Hashem brought them the slav, it was called, those quail. But in that story, there's a few details that are important to know. When the Jewish people were complaining so much, Moshe Rabbeinu felt quite overwhelmed, like with all this, and he turned to Hashem that it's too much, and you know, is he the mother? Did he bear them? How can he give them everything? Is there enough meat in the world? All this. And that's when Hashem tells Moshe to reappoint a Sanhedrin, right? As we said, also because they passed away just before in whatever sin that they did. So we had this story that we touched on, that there was lots that they drew. He had to have 70 altogether. If there's 12 tribes, it's not an equal amount. So therefore, two of the tribes would have 6 representatives, the rest would only have 5. So how do you do that? So he had lots, and he had 72 lots, so each tribe sent 6 men, but 2 of the men would end up drawing a lot that didn't say anything on it, and they would know they have to go home. Anyways, we found in that story, there was a sub-story of 2 people, Eldad and Medad, who were very, very special righteous people. Actually, they were even more righteous than the others, but they were extremely humble, and they didn't present themselves to Moshe Rabbeinu. But Hashem wanted them to receive prophecy, and they were worthy really on their own of receiving prophecy. So even in their own tents, all of a sudden they started to prophesy. Good morning, Rose. Come, we just started. Good morning. So it says like this, interesting thing, the other 70, Moshe had to share from his prophecy. So it was like they weren't getting directly from Hashem. They were getting indirectly. They were getting through Moshe. And as we know that a candle can light many candles and it won't diminish the light of the candle. The same way Moshe can share his spiritual energy and it won't diminish his own, right? But those 2, Eldad and Medad, good morning, received from Hashem. So they were in the tent and they started to prophesy. And what did they say? Famous thing. They said, Moshe Rabbeinu is going to pass away and Yahushua is going to lead us into Eretz Yisrael. Well, Moshe Rabbeinu's son wasn't so impressed when he heard that, and he reported it to Yahushua, and they were up in arms, and they were very upset, and they wanted Eldad and Medad to stop prophesizing, and they ran to Moshe Rabbeinu, but Moshe Rabbeinu knew that this was directly from Hashem, and he wasn't affected, he wasn't upset at all, and they actually were incredible, but they became part of the Sanhedrin. It's just a sub-story there. We'll see why it affects our story in a minute. Anyways, after that, we have the whole story of the slav. We started it, and what happened was that this quail fell from heaven. We're in the middle of Parshas Baal Eischa. So this fish, whatever, quail, which tasted like fish and like meat, and it said that even, it's interesting that actually in the falling, more people died than in the eating of it. It was a terrible thing that happened. Moshe Rabbeinu actually begged Hashem not to do it, and Hashem said, well, why don't you try and talk to the people, talk them out of it. And he did go, and the people were so stubborn that they were demanding it, that they didn't listen to what Moshe had to say. They didn't pull back. And instead, what they said was, you know why Hashem wants us to stop complaining? Because he doesn't have enough meat for us. In other words, they were so ungrateful, as you can see. And obviously, as we mentioned, there was a few of them, the Erev Rav, whatever it was, and it was Dasan and Aviram, all the terrible people. So Moshe had no choice. And the slav taka fell, and as we saw, many people did die. It was for 30 days, different people died different times. Some people died instantly. Some people say those were the more righteous ones. Some people say that the ones who were more righteous took longer to die so that they had more time to live. Whichever way you want to look at it, some people actually even say that some righteous people really, they didn't mean bad, but they got a little bit touched by the complaints of the others. So what happened to them was that they actually tasted a little bit of it, but they realized their mistake right away, and they went into their homes, and they didn't die. So there's a whole assortment of people of what happened to everybody. But the bottom line was that it was a terrible story, and the Jewish people learned, hopefully, their lesson, as we know, as we see in the stories, each story, one story after another. But the point was that there was a time, as we can see, that you can see, first of all, the ungratefulness, but it's not just ungrateful. It's more that deep yearning that the Jewish people have for things that they are not able to have. what was it here? Okay, meat. All of a sudden they decide they want meat. We said it meant a lot of other things. Some of it was the immorality that they missed from the times of Egypt. They said, oh, we want that, some of them. That's, we said, fish symbolizes that. Different people had different complaints, all hinted to in the psukim. Okay, we're not going to go into that in depth now. So I want to move on to the next story. The reason that, I just want to see if there was anything else there. Yeah, so Eldad, the maid that we mentioned, and then the slav. Okay. Now we come to the next story. And this is called Kivrais HaTaiva, the place where they had the terrible desire, if you want to say, the burial of those who had this desire for meat, and they died there, and that was it. Now, moving on, the place the Torah tells us that they were in or that they were traveling to was a place called Chatzeres. Chatzeres becomes famous for the next story. What happens is they get stuck in Chatzeres. And why? Now the Torah tells us why. So just to tell you at the end of the story, of this story, we know that Miriam got leprosy, right? She got saras. And the Jewish people, in honor of Miriam, didn't travel. They waited for her for 7 days. So they were sort of stuck a little bit longer in Chatzeres than they originally planned to be. But let's understand this story. So in front of you, this is a very incredible story. And actually, one of the stories in the Torah that you see that you really, really, really need to learn the Mefarshim to understand what the Psukim are talking about, because without it, it's very unclear. Many parts of this story, even though it's a famous story, are very unclear. The most famous part of the story is that Miriam speaks to Aaron about Moshe Rabbeinu. Miriam gets tzaras. Moshe Rabbeinu davens for her. She is healed. And then they move on, right? But there's so many parts that are so unclear. One of the big things is we're talking about Miriam, the great Miriam, who we've mentioned so many times, the leader, literally, she was equal. It says, interestingly, when she was sick, Aaron said to Moshe, you have to daven for her because she's like half of our family, even though she's only a third. So he made her equivalent to both him and Moshe, right? You see, it's an interesting thing. She was, as we know, the leader of the woman. She was the one who, if not for her, Moshe wouldn't even have been born to begin with. So Miriam, who is just everything, how could this have happened? What did she say? That's what we have to understand. What was this Lashon Hara? Why? What motivated her to speak about Moshe Rabbeinu? And what was it that she found? What?
Women's rights.
Women's rights. Don't think so, but well. But what was it that motivated? What was it that she said? And it's very unclear in the Psukim. What did she say? And the other interesting question that I've always pondered and wondered, and it's not very, very unclear, she spoke to Aaron, and you know, we're always taught that Lashon Hara is obviously a very negative thing, right, as we know. So who's, so to speak, who's responsible? Who's the one who's doing the negative? It's not just the one speaking, but of course it's the one listening, right? Where's Aaron's punishment in this? Did he get saras? Doesn't say that in the Torah. Very interesting, fascinating. So that we have to understand what's happening.
He lost his sound.
He did, but that was that's not to do with this. But you're right, Riva. He definitely suffered enough. He suffered in many ways. But Miriam herself also. Remember, they killed her. That was also. So they all suffered. That's not the, you know, suffering. Unfortunately, we know sometimes the greater the tzaddik, the more the suffering. But here, let's understand what's happening. So we have to understand the story. And it's so unclear. And also interesting that this is not just a story. You know, that every day in davening, we have, some people have this at the end of davening, you have these things called the Sheish Schiras, six things that we have to remember every day, amongst which is the story of Amalek. And one of them is, remember what happened to Miriam in the desert. So what is this? This is something very, obviously it's a very, you know, it's a very big pillar in our relationship with Hashem and our understanding of what Torah is and in how we are meant to live every single day. So we have to understand, what is this story? Okay, so look at the sheets in front of you. So I'm going to share the screen now here. It's in, okay, so we'll just share here and, okay. So I think it's on the first page of your, I hope I made this right. What is the first page of your booklet? What number? Page number?
186.
Oh, it's missing a page. Okay. All right. I'm so sorry. I missed a page. I see. because there's a page before it in the, I don't know why. I'm just going to see how much it is, if it's worth it. It's worth it. I'm so sorry. I don't know what happened to that page. It must have gotten lost somewhere. Okay, so I just want to read. I'll just start reading, and I don't know what page number it is in the Chumash, though. We'll see. You know, if we find the page in the... I know you probably have it, but you're muted. It's Perek Yud Beis, and I'd like to start Pasuk Aleph in Perek Yud Beis. Thank you. I don't know. It's in Chumash Bamidbar, Perek Yud Beis. I don't know what page number. I'm so sorry, I don't know. I made so many copies and not the right page. See, I'm missing the first page here. Okay. Okay. Do you have it? Parshas, it's the end of Parshas Bahaleischa, the last chapter in Parshas Bahaleischa. Do you know what page number it is? Sorry.
Yeah.
726, is that?
It's Parshat
It's Perek Yud Beis, 12, chapter 12.
1186, is that it?
No, it would be before that. I'm so sorry. That's me. Okay, sorry everybody, you guys have it. They don't, but we have it on the computer it is. But unfortunately, when I made the copies here. Okay, so Perek Yud Beis, and it says like this. So you'll see how cryptic, it's incredible. Vatidaber Miriam, right? Do you see it there? Pasuk Aleph in Perek Yud Beis. Vatidaber Miriam V'arein. Look how it says. Look at every word. Vatidaber. Do you see that word, Vatidaber? Speak. Who spoke in Vatidaber? Yes, because the Tav is she. And she spoke. Do you see that? Even though it says Miriam and Aaron. But it says she spoke. It doesn't say they spoke. First of all, it says it in feminine, and it also is singular. Interesting. So you can see who's the main speaker. Vatidaber Miriam, the Aaron. And what did they say? Bim Moshe, which is about Moshe. And what did they say? Very unclear. Al oidais ha'isha ha'kushis, regarding the Kushite woman, lokach, that he had married, that he had took, ki isha kushis lokach, because he married a Kushite woman. That's all it says. I'll show you why. Look at the next pasuk. Look, then it says something. Sorry, let's read the next pasuk. Vayayimru, now it's both of them. See? Now both are talking. Harak ach bin Moshe. And it's interesting. Harak ach, that's two negatives. You don't talk, that's not the way we speak. Such a funny, was it only with Moshe? Diber Hashem, that Hashem spoke. Haloi gam bonu diber, didn't he also speak to us? La yishma Hashem, and Hashem heard. And then we have one of the most famous, beautiful psukim in the Torah. Vaha ish Moshe, and the man Moshe, onav ma'oid, was exceedingly humble, mikol ha'adam, from all man, asher al-pnei ha'adama, on the face of the earth. But these psukim are so unclear. What are they saying? Do you understand what they're saying? What's Miriam saying? It's so unclear. What is she saying? And, okay, it seems that she's doing the main talking. That's what it seems. But what's happening? So let's first we always say, let's look into Rashi, and I'm sorry that you don't have that... the one I made originally, but if you can, on the bottom, there is Rashi, but I'll read clearly, about Tidaber. So it says, Ein Diber Bechol Mokoyim Ela Lashon Kasha. So first, Rashi shows us something very, that we can, this word, about Tidaber, says a lot. First of all, as we said, it's singular, and it's in the feminine, but it's also the word Daber, as opposed to, what other word could we have used? Amar, right? Like Vatoimar, that she spoke. The word Aleph Mem Resh is also to speak. Why are we using the word Dalet Beis Resh? Daber. Yes, instead of Amar. Interesting. So Rashi says, when you use the word Dibor, it means it's strong, harsh in this context. So obviously showing us that she spoke something strongly about Moshe Rabbeinu. And in our context, obviously it has a negative something in it, right? That's what it must be. That's what shows us, just that one word. And he gives examples, this is examples from Yosef and the brothers, as we say, when the brothers came back to Yaakov, they said, the man, the Lord of the land, spoke harshly to us. That was Yosef. They didn't know it was Yosef, right? And then he says, "Ve'ein amira," the word amira, "b'chol makayim, ela l'shayim tachanunim." When you use the word amira, that's supplicative. That's like, it's a much softer language, and it's a much more like when you're begging for something or pleading or asking, it's a much nicer. It's not harsh. So just from this, we already see that there's something harsh, something challenging that Miriam is speaking about Moshe. You can already see. Let's go now to the next Rashi. Vatidaber Miriam v'Aaron. Okay, so now Miriam, it looks like, and Aaron both spoke. So Rashi says right away, he pascha b'dibor tchila. She began speaking. Lefichach hikdima hakasov. That's why the pasuk puts her first ahead of Aaron. Now, why shouldn't the pasuk put her first? Like, why do we know that because she started speaking, that's why her name is first? Maybe her name is first is because that's what the pasuk wants to do. Well, in Torah we know, first of all, Aaron was the Kohen Gadol, right? So he usually would have gotten precedence as far as who spoke, or would have, not only as far as his name being mentioned first. This is a very unusual thing to put Miriam before Aaron. Obviously, it's Dafke, to show us that she began speaking. Okay, now,
she's
so
the older one?
Yeah, so it is true that she is, but still, nevertheless, I think she is the older one, but even still, oh, that's a good question. I always get confused. I'm not sure. Is Aaron a Bechor? I'm not sure if Miriam's the oldest or Aaron, but usually would have anyway said Aaron's name first. Must be Miriam's, I have to check. I should know. Okay. Miriam is the older one. Yeah, definitely. It says here on the bottom. Yes, Miriam is the older one. Okay, but nevertheless, usually you would have Aaron first. Must be, she started speaking. Okay, now, interesting also, another interesting thing, that's why it mentions that, why Rashi has to tell us, because this is to clarify something that we're going to get to later. Because we will see when we read the psukim that the one who gets the punishment is Miriam. Not, well, we'll see if Aaron, he does. But the one that the pasuk highlights as getting the punishment, and definitely gets the more severe punishment, is Miriam. So that's why Rashi tells us right away, realize that she is the one that began the conversation. What?
She started.
She started, exactly. She leads it. She's the one who's starting, and she's the main speaker. So that's why it makes sense what flows afterwards. It's just setting the tone. Rashi's clarifying before we get into it. But now we have to understand, what's happening here? Okay, so let's see how Rashi says.
I've got a different take on it. I think she was trying to do shalom bayit.
Okay, so we'll see, Riva. You're not wrong. Intention was 100% good. There's no question that Miriam and Aaron both had amazing intention. Obviously, we are talking about the most greatest tzaddikim who put their life on the line for everybody. So it's not even a question that whatever they did, and we'll see, we'll explore what her intention is and why it fits with who she was and why this mattered to her so much. But first we have to understand what she said. So let's see what Rashi tells us, and then we'll see that. So let's see what he says. Uminayin hoisa. Okay, so first of all, Yaidas, Miriam, like it's interesting, Rashi's taking it as if we know already what she said. Okay, so what did Miriam say? According to most opinions, what Miriam said was, Miriam said to Aaron, do you know that I just found out that Moshe Rabbeinu is not living with his wife? He doesn't live with his wife. They have no relations, they're separated. And that's not the way of the Jewish people. That's not what Hashem wants. And how do we know? Okay, so maybe because he's a prophet. But look, me and you, we manage, we're prophets, we get prophecy, and we're still, and never mind me and you. What about Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? What's happening? Moshe's behavior is not acceptable. That's what she says. Let's see. And how did she know? So Rashi says, where did Miriam know Sheperash Moshe min Aisha, that Moshe had separated himself? So Rabbi Nosson Omer, okay, let's see. As he says over here, Miriam Haisa Bitsad Tzipora. That's what we said before in the story. Because Miriam was standing next to Tzipora, who was Moshe's wife. B'shar Shenemar LeMoshe, at the time that it was said to Moshe, Eldad Umeidad Misnabin B'machaneh. Remember, those two great people were prophesying in the camp. And when it happened, Kevan Sheshama Tzipora, what did she say? What was her reaction immediately? She said, oy vavoy, I feel very bad for their wives. Because now that they receive prophecy, they're going to separate from their wives. So Miriam was, what do you mean? So she said, well, that's what happened to me. Until then, Miriam had not been aware. And this is interesting, so interesting. All of a sudden, Miriam becomes aware. Now, you said she had good intention. Of course she had good intention. What do we know about Miriam before you go inside? What's Miriam's essence, so to speak,
b'chlal? She's a rabbi. She's looked after the boys.
Well, she was almost like Moshe Rabbeinu's mother in a certain way, right? From the original part. She took care. She stood there watching when he was in the river. We know something else amazing about Miriam. Miriam never, ever stood aside when there was something injustice being done. Where do we see that first with Miriam? That's when Moshe was actually born. What did she do? Who did she confront first when she was a little girl? Her own father, Amram. Do you remember? When Amram and Yocheved separated, how dare you? You're worse than Pare. Remember she said? Get back together. Okay. So she was so, if you want to say, had such chutzpah in a good way, that she wasn't afraid. And even afterwards, when Moshe was thrown into the river, what did Amram do? The Gemara tells us. He slapped her. He said, where's your prophecy? Where's your good words? Like, in other words, look, because of you, we got together again. Now we had Moshe, and look where he is. He's going to be killed. So she was fearless, Miriam. Later on, she was fearless, we know, with her mother. She went to Pare, and she confronted him, no fear at all. She was ready to confront any injustice. That was Miriam. We'll see how that plays out in this story, which is a bit different, but that still is why she cares so much. You see, you're right, she cares. It's coming from a place of love and care, and definitely from a sincerity. Something wasn't 100% though here. And let's see how it plays out. Okay, so she's not happy, so she hears what Sapphira has to say, and she's a little bit upset. So that's why she goes to Aaron. And listen to this interesting thing, and she tells him what she heard. So at the end of the Rashi, she says something interesting. Why is this? Why are we being told the story even in a hinting way? He says, well, we learn something absolutely incredible from this story. Uma Miriam Shalaynis Kavna Lignusa, who didn't intend to speak of anything negative, Kach Nensha, right, as you said, Rashi says right away, she didn't mean anything negative. She only meant positive. And yet she's so severely punished. What do we learn? Kal v'chaymer, l'misaper b'gnusay shel chaveray. How much more so if we say something negative about somebody else and we don't intend necessarily in a very positive way. Okay, we might be bothered. It might be hurting us. But nevertheless, we don't care about that person as much as Miriam cared about Moshe Rabbeinu and as much as Aaron cared about Moshe Rabbeinu. And yet Miriam gets such a severe punishment for trying to help a situation that she felt was unjustified. How much more so for us to be careful when we open up our mouth. That's already, Rashi sets the tone for the reason that we are even being told the story. But it's also, if you think a little bit deeper, the reason why we are not told the story in a clear way. Because it's not important what she was talking about. That's not the point of the story. It's not the issue. It's the fact that she spoke negative. It's not what the subject matter was, and it's not even important for us so much to know the subject matter according to the strict things of the psukim, right? Just a hint to it. We don't need, it's not our business. Because first of all, we don't need to speak negative about Moshe. We don't need to speak negative about Miriam. We don't need, right? We don't need. But we have to learn the lesson. So that's why, you see, it's amazing how it's done so subtly and yet so strongly at the same time. Quite a powerful concept that's coming through these psukim. And Rashi already gives us a bit of a hint to understanding. So the main thrust is not the subject matter. The main thrust is the negativity of the speech and what comes out of it that we'll see, the praise of Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's the main thrust of it. And the praise of Moshe Rabbeinu is so strong because, if you think about it, up until now, also putting in context, what did we just have before? All the Jewish people complaining. They're complaining about the mun, complaining about the no meat, complaining about the water, complaining, right? Moshe Rabbeinu, who had just shared that he was so weak from their complaints, right? That's what he said, he couldn't anymore. He said, am I the mother? Did I bear them? Was I pregnant with them? I can't take care of them. And who do you think would give Moshe the most comfort? Who would he reach out to? His sister Miriam, you would imagine. And here, what does she do almost? Turn against him. It's so hurt, the most hurtful position that Moshe could have felt. The two people who would imagine he could for sure rely on, here, all of a sudden, it's a little bit shaky. That sets the tone for why we mention Moshe's humility. So let's see a little bit more. It's so incredible how the flow is so amazing and the lessons. Let's see. Let's just look what he, but let's just see, because the pasuk hints, we'll just quickly see what was said. And there's different ways to explain it, because it says, Al oydos isha ha-kushi, it's about the isha kushi. So the literal translation of the word kushi is, you say like from chum, right? Like African, which means dark, right? So there's a mistake. There's an interesting thing to understand. What does it mean? I mean, that they spoke badly about Moshe, that he took a woman who was Isha Kushis, and then about the woman that was Isha Kushis. It's a double language, and what are they even saying? So let's see what Rashi says. So first of all, why are we highlighting about Tzipora that she was, and calling her Isha Kushis? So Rashi says something quite amazing. If you look into the next Rashi, I think you have this in front of you. Yeah, this is page 136 in the middle. You can see it in the art scroll, it's easy to see. You see in the middle, Ha'isha HaKushis, Magid, Shahakol Moidim Biyafya. Everybody admitted to her beauty. Where does beautiful come into Isha Kushis? Kishem Shahakol Moidim Bishachrusoy Shel Kushi. Just as all admit to the darkness of a Kushis. Like if you see something black, you say it's black, right? And you don't, it's not contested. That's how beautiful she was. You couldn't contest her beauty. She was beautiful, Tzipora. Why does it repeat it? And let's see. And Rashi says something else. Kushis is Yifas Gematria Yifas Mare. It actually is the same gematria as the words beautiful in appearance. Is that amazing? So she was beautiful. I think I don't know if Rashi says, but the other Mefarshim say it repeats it because she was beautiful both on the outside and on the inside. We're not just talking physical beauty, that's the least important. She was a beautiful woman in every way, in her depth, in her spiritual state, in her physical state. She was beautiful. So obviously, what does that have to do with anything? What's Miriam saying? Seems to be Miriam is trying to understand, why is Moshe separating from her, right? She's a beautiful woman. What's going on? Why is he separating? He has no reason to. I mean, not that that's a reason anyway, but the point is, what's going on? Let's see what he says. So Rashi says, Al oydos ha'isha, so that hints to us, Al oydos gerusha, regarding her being sent away. And then he says, Ki isha kushis lakach, ma talmud leimer, why does the Torah say this? In other words, the repetition, Ella yeshlach, this is on page 137, isha, sorry, let's see, here it is, Ella yeshlach isha na biyafya. We can have a woman who is pleasing in her beauty, ve'eina b'maseha, but not pleasing in her actions, b'maseha v'lo biyafya. Right? Some people are not good people, but they're not beautiful in their physical beauty. But Rashi says, but this one, not at the call, she was pleasing in all respects. Now Rashi says another explanation, ha'isha kushis, al shem, again, because of her beauty, nikreis kushis, so it's saying, like, in other words, it's a euphemism, like shouldn't have ayin hara. She's so beautiful, but he doesn't want to say it in openly, so it just hints to it, or says it in an opposite way, however you want to explain it. But the point is, that Tzipora is obviously standing back and saying what Moshe is doing is wrong. That's it, wrong. He's behaving, it's not acceptable. Now, but we still don't understand what the problem is, and also we have to understand why Moshe do it. What's going on here? That's hinted, again hinted. So let's see in the next pasuk. Because what did we say? Harak ach b'Moshe. Was it only just with Moshe? In other words, does Hashem only speak to Moshe Rabbeinu? So he says, Imay levadai, with him when he was by himself, Diber Hashem, then Hashem spoke. Haloi gam banu Diber. Didn't he also speak to us? And we don't behave like Moshe. We stay. We do all the normal things like normal people do. So, what's going on here? And the pasuk tells us about Moshe being an anav. So we have to understand where that even comes in. Go to in your booklets. Skip a few pages because I want to just show you something. Just want to look a few mefarshim to understand something quite amazing here. Let's see. It has a number. If you go up until where you see numbers on your page, number one, number two, let's see. It looks like it's the ones with the Mikrais Gedalus. Do you see this one? It looks like that. It's in the middle. Yeah, keep going. A little bit more. Another two pages it'll be. This one. It says a number one on top. It goes more, Riva, I think, more than that. Yeah, go further, not that. Okay. So look what it says there. We have a few beautiful mefarshim, and I just want to show you. Okay. So I just want to show you this one. Okay, so a term we said. Okay, we have to understand this pasuk and where this comes in. So first I want to just do the Arachayim HaKadosh. It's in the middle of the page. The Arachayim says, V'atidaber v'goymer b'Moshe. And she spoke against Moshe Rabbeinu. If you don't find it, it says a number one, but I'll read it and translate, and I'll show you. Batadabra Moshe. Ulai shadabru b'fanav. Now we have an interesting thing. The whole time, what do we picture? Like, if we picture the story happening, so we think that Miriam had just heard what Tzipora said. She's upset. So she runs over to Aaron, she pulls him to the side, and they have a private conversation, right? That's what it sounds like. And then Hashem steps in afterwards, and he's not impressed. And Miriam gets her punishment. He praises Moshe, and then Miriam gets her punishment. But the Arachayim says something interesting, and this puts a whole different spin to the story. It is very, very possible that it wasn't private. What do we mean by it wasn't private? Miriam would never talk in public. No way. Who else heard, maybe? Moshe himself. So interesting. That makes the whole thing so different. It could be that Miriam spoke to Aaron in a way where she was hoping that Moshe would also hear. And let's see, that makes it so different, because then you think, well, why doesn't he just explain himself, right? Why does Hashem have to step in? He can just say what's going on. He knows the reason for what he's doing. He doesn't do anything without Hashem telling him. Let's see. So let's see what the Or HaChaim HaKadosh says. V'tadaber b'Moshe, ulai shadaber b'fanav, shel Moshe, maybe they spoke in front of Moshe. V'hadas maskemes v'zeh, and actually it makes sense, he says. Gam ken ki maya ilu davar diber loitai b'meyem l'vein atzman. Because what would it help? Miriam, everything she does is with thought. I am so sorry that I don't know. Okay. So next time I'll make more. Okay. So it says like this. Would Miriam, who obviously has good intention, at Tzadekis, would she just speak to Aaron for what? For what purpose? It must be she would have thought about it. Even though she was obviously very upset, she only would do something with a good intention in mind. So the Arachayim says, she would for sure speak where Moshe could also hear, because it doesn't make sense for Moshe not to hear. Because the whole idea is that she wants him to change. She's hoping he's going to change, or she'll have to understand what's going on. So that's what he says. Ella amru devrayim derech teichacha v'hu shameya milasam. Rather, she must have said it in a way of admonishing, and that he should hear. He should hear what she was saying. And that's one opinion. Not all opinions say that, but one opinion. And then he says, that's why it's hinted to Vayishma Hashem, that Hashem heard. And then it says Vayish Moshe, and the man Moshe was humble. Gam hu shoma, even he heard. In other words, even Hashem heard. Moshe heard, and even Hashem was listening to what they were saying. Obviously, Hashem listens, but he paid attention. It mattered to him. It really mattered, and that's why Hashem stepped in immediately. Let's see how he says, Harak Achbe Moshe. So on the bottom of it says like this, Oydev Shashem Iskavnu, Lirmais Beiz Mi'utim Shahayu B'Nevuas Moshe. Because I said it's two negatives, it's two minimizing words. Like when you say, but only, you know, you don't usually do that. Why? Because it's actually what she's doing, Miriam, is she's minimizing the greatness, not in a bad way, but she's trying to show Moshe's not better than us, so to speak, or so different. He's actually even less than me and you, Aaron. How is he less? So she shows, she says two things. It says, Aleph Shalayn is Naba'at Shahayu Ben Shmainim Shana. Moshe did not say prophecy until he was 80 years old, right? That's when he went to the burning bush and Hashem took him aside and made him who he was. He was hesitant, he accepted the role afterwards, but he was already 80 years old. She says, as we know, Moshe ben Shmainim Shana, it says in the Pasuk, he was 80 years old when he went to Paray. But Aaron and Miriam, Nisnabu b'nei Gimel v'hei, Koidem Shenoilad Moshe. Me and you, Miriam says to Aaron, we were 3 years old, 5 years old, when we started our career of prophecy, right? Miriam said, there's going to be a baby boy born. You better get together again. There's going to be a Mashiach coming. There's going to be a Geula. Miriam spoke with prophecy, both to her parents, to the Jewish woman around her, inspiring everybody from when she was a very small young girl. So what's this? What's so special about Moshe Rabbeinu? Never mind, he's less even than us. And what's the second thing? The next thing is interesting. That on the day that Moshe Rabbeinu started his prophecy, something fascinating happened to him. This also puts context to this story, because sometimes people think, oh, the woman, they get punished more harshly. She got the Taras and Aaron didn't. Mm-hmm. What happened to Moshe the first day when he got his prophecy? He got Taras, do you remember? Because remember how he was hesitating to go? And then he got Taras on his arm, do you remember, with the stick? He got the first day, never mind that we are prophets for much longer, but the first day that he gets prophecy, he already gets Saras. So she's not saying it in a way to make him to be negative in that sense, but she's trying to understand, why does Moshe think he has to behave so differently to everybody else? Even to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. That's what she understands. Never mind us for sure, and what about them? So this is what she's emphasizing. Another interesting thing, then the pasuk ends up saying, Vayishma Hashem, and Hashem heard. I mean, obviously Hashem hears everything. So obviously, what's the point of that? So Rechaim says, Hutzrach Loimar Vayishma Hashem. It has to tell us that Hashem heard. Loimar Shalei Shama Ela Hashem. Only Hashem heard. Hakavana Vazeh Shalei Dibru B'fnei Bria. They didn't speak in front of anybody. Maybe just in front of Moshe, but definitely not in public. Again, emphasizing. And it's not like our Lashon Hara when we talk and we want people to know the negative things about the other person that we're saying, Chas V'Shalom, right? Here we're talking about Miriam speaking it. Obviously, she meant it for a purpose. And she's speaking to her brother, the one that, and Moshe Rabbeinu's brother. I mean, you can think, what could be wrong with that? And yet, such a strong punishment. The idea to teach us again the severity and the strength and the importance and the value of how we have to be careful with what we say. So he says like this, Oy, and this is another magnificent, this leads on to the next topic. This gives us the context. The Rechaim tells us something amazing. He says, Oy, niskavin loymar, shemehem shama v'loymi Moshe. And we talk about tears. Who did Hashem hear from? So if Moshe is standing on the side, let's just say if there's three people, if you have a sister, a brother, and another brother, and the sister and brother are talking about the third brother, and it hurts. It hurts a lot because you know you're justified in what you're doing. You're doing the right thing. Hashem told you to do that, right? What do you think Moshe would do? One of two things we would imagine. Either turn to Hashem and cry, right? That would be the first thing. Or confront them, right? One of two. Does he do that? Neither of them. Hashem heard it from Miriam, not from Moshe. Moshe didn't cry out, Hashem help me. He didn't go over to Miriam and say, what are you saying? And defend and explain himself. Nothing. Unbelievable. This leads to what we're saying. Why? Because Moshe was the most humble person that ever lived on the face of the earth. Meaning to say that he didn't stand up for his own pride, his own self, right? For his own reputation. That wasn't part of it. And we'll see in a minute what this humility is, because we know Moshe wasn't just a shmata, right? Moshe Rabbeinu stood up to Bnei Yisrael many times. He was a very strong leader. But when it comes to his own honor, dignity, there, it doesn't exist. He's not going to stand up. So it's quite incredible how it leads on. So it's a Vayishma Hashem. Hashem heard from Miriam. That's who he heard from. And as the Aruch Chaim says so beautifully, Shalai kibel lifnei Hashem kederach hane'elvin mizulasan. Like the usual, when somebody is insulted, it hurts. We know, that's human nature, it hurts. And when we get insulted, we cry out. When we cry to Hashem, it's not even so bad. That's actually a good thing. That's the truth. That's acceptable. But sometimes we don't just leave it there. Why we have to share it with this one and that one? Did you know what they said to me? Did you know what they said about me? It hurts, so we do that. Here we see Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't say anything. Not the normal way for a person who's being so deeply insulted and hurt, right? This is the greatness of Moshe, and this leads on to Moshe was the most humble man that ever lived. I want to just see the Aruch Chaim and see Haidia Kosov Zukan. The Pasuk tells us here about this, about Moshe's humility. Lefi Masha Kasavnu, Shedibru Befonav, that they spoke in front of him. Nosan Akosov Tam, Shehotzach Hashem Lasseis. So it gives us the reason why Hashem had to step in if they spoke and Moshe heard. Why doesn't Moshe respond? Because he's the most humble. Because of his great humility, Nimna, he held back from responding to them. The answer that he should have given to explain what's happening. They should understand that there's a big difference between the prophecy of Moshe and the prophecies of the other prophets. He should have responded, but he is the most humble. And I want to just show you how the Ramban says it on the same page. You see that gimel is, there's a gimel that's circled. Hashem was zealous. We had a last week, Zimri zealous, this concept of zealousness, of standing up for something that's wrong. Who was bothered? Hashem. Hashem stood up for him, ba'avor anvesunasa, because of his humility. Ki hu lo yo'ane al riv, because Moshe never answered on a quarrel forever. Af im yoda, even if he knows. And the Eben Ezra explains it similarly, but slightly different. Mefarish v'amar, Moshe Rabbeinu never ever sought to be greater than anybody else. And he never sought to be greater. He never sought respect. He never sought to put himself on a higher rung than anybody else. And that's why he will not explain to them what's happening here, because that would make it that I'm better than others. That's why I have to do what I have to do. But Moshe doesn't behave that way. That's from his incredible humility. So it all sets the tone for what Hashem will explain, that Moshe is so different to anybody who ever lived on the face of the earth. And this concept of humility is such a fascinating one. Humility is one of the most misunderstood midas, I think, in the Torah. It's considered a very prime midah, right? To be humble, as we see, Moshe is so praised by it. Not only Moshe. Moshe modeled himself on Hashem. We say that Hashem is the most humble. What does humility mean? It's such an interesting thing. What is humility?
Didn't Moshe make it a mistake not to talk to his wife that this is what he had? That's a greater respect than whatever he did.
Yeah. So that's that's a good question, Daisy. You know, it's actually a very good question. But I feel bad. Let's leave it, but ask me again. But it is a good question. It's not. I just want to get... Yeah, but you're right. In a sense, we want to understand why Tzipora didn't understand his motivation, or maybe she did, but she was just speaking from her pain. Do you understand? So it could be even if he did, the pain was still there, which is also normal, you know, in that sense. But yeah, I hear you. It's an interesting thing. So just to understand one thing before we go further, just a fact that when the Jewish people got the Torah, right, so it said that they had to separate, right, for 3 days before. That was the only time. After the giving of the Torah, Hashem said to the Jewish people, go back to your tents. But the one that Hashem didn't say it to was Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe was not told to go back to his tent. Moshe had to remain separate. It was a command from Hashem, unique only to Moshe Rabbeinu. Only. mamish exclusive. This wasn't for anybody before or anybody after. And we know the reason is that Moshe Taka was, as we're going to see soon, very different type of prophet to anybody that ever lived. Hashem would appear to Moshe at any moment, any time, any day, a time, day, and night, as well as in a very revealed way, direct way, much different than all other prophets. So he had a unique relationship, and therefore he had a unique way of living, which was exclusive to Moshe. So much so that even Miriam couldn't understand it, you realize. So that's quite incredible. It's not like it's not something that we can even try to understand. It's not for us to understand, but it's a fact. The Torah tells us that this is how it was. But I want to understand what this means. Why is this? This sounds like it's such a powerful one. The most humble man that ever lived on the face of the earth. It's like, so what a massive statement. And what is humility? So what is humility? What do you think? When you think of humility? Moshe, the most humble man, such a strong leader, a fearless leader, you don't usually associate that with humility. You think of a humble person, somebody sort of more in the corner, right? The one who doesn't speak up. Right, right. That's true. That would definitely be the case, 100%.
Of course.
No, I'm saying, but that would be a sign of humility. Yeah. You're right, there would be that, 100%. What did you say before? Put people before him. Very interesting, okay? Yeah.
Maybe he didn't do anything wrong.
He didn't do anything wrong.
That's what he thought.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting one. But this concept of humility, such a... Because it is very much associated with him because of this pasuk. We always talk about the greatness of Moshe being humble. He had other great things. He was very wealthy. He was very, very intelligent. It says Moshe was one of the... Besides Shlomo HaMelech, he was like the most intelligent man, as far as Chochmah, he reached the highest level, almost to the 50th level of Bina. Moshe was also extremely strong. He killed Oig. So he had so many different qualities. But this one is one of the most famous ones, and actually says that it was the merit of his humility that he actually received the prophecy the way he did. The special resting of the Shechinah. So let's just understand, what is humility? I want to understand. What is humility? What was going through Moshe Rabbeinu's mind? Do you really think that Moshe Rabbeinu, who was chosen, hand-picked by Hashem, even before that, even step back, from the family that he was, Amram, his father, Yocheved, his mother, leaders of the generation, from the tribe of Levi, who themselves were separate from everybody else, from, like I would say, the most prestigious of families, then he comes in and Hashem, you know, specially chooses him to be the one to go take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. Hashem has a special conversation. Moshe doesn't want to do it. Hashem convinces him. How could it be? And then Moshe goes up on the mountain 3 times, gets the special audience. Nobody in the world gets to go up to Shemayim and come back down again, besides Eliyahu HaNavi, right? Who does that? What does this humility? Did he really not know? Did he not know how special he was? You think he didn't know? Think he didn't think he was different? His soul was talking. It's true. You're right. Rose, you're right. It definitely was his soul. It came through, straight, directly through him, through Moshe Rabbeinu. But that's because of his humility. So just on a simple level, it's always, this is like the usual that's explained. It says that Moshe did know. Because you humble and Torah doesn't mean you don't know your gifts. That's nothing to do with humility. That's actually called shval ruach. That's a negative thing. Somebody who feels low. That's not a positive trait in Torah. A positive trait in Torah is not when a person doesn't recognize their gifts, their talents, their abilities, their uniqueness. Not positive. Torah demands, Hashem demands, that every person should know who they are, not only their problems, not only the criticism, not only the things they need to fix, but even more, to know what they're good at. Otherwise, if you think about it, that is the most ungrateful thing that you could do. If Hashem has given you gifts, if Hashem has made you with a certain talent, and you deny that talent, you don't recognize it, that's the most ungrateful thing in the world. Imagine a parent giving a child something, and the child says, oh, it's nothing, it's worth nothing. It's the worst thing you could do. So obviously he knew his gifts. He knew his talents. He knew his uniqueness. There's no question about it. How is he still humble then? So what went through Moshe's mind? So the famous line that's always said, Moshe Rabbeinu had this interesting thought process, and he said like this, Hashem has gifted me. Hashem has gifted me, right? He gave me all these special gifts, my family, my opportunities, my uniqueness, my intelligence, whatever it may be that I have, my saintliness, right? He gave me all. It's all from Hashem. And then Moshe said, if somebody else would be given everything that I was given, they would do even more than what I would do with it. That's what went through Moshe's mind. This is humility. It's from God, and I appreciate it, and I will use it because I have to use it. Otherwise, that's really ungrateful. And I will recognize it 100%. I will acknowledge it, but I will know, and that's what Moshe Rabbeinu knew, that it's a gift from Hashem. But even more than it's a gift, somebody else is given. So there's two ways to look at it. In some opinion, says they might use it better than me. Some people say, no, Moshe Rabbeinu said they would for sure use it more than me. There isn't even a question. If somebody was given what I was given, they would do much more with it. And then a deeper thing it explains about Moshe's humility was that Moshe, because of his incredible humility of understanding that everything he has is mamash a gift from Hashem, and somebody else would do so much more. So not only did he never feel superior to anybody else, but he actually felt a little bit less than other people. Because he looked at another person and he said, if you would have what I had, if you would have my opportunity, you would be much more than me. And what did that mean practically? Moshe never remained apart, always involved himself with the lowest of the low people. It didn't matter who you were. He didn't look at you and say, well, you're fitting for me to talk to, or you're not fitting for me to talk to. Every Jew was fitting for Moshe Rabbeinu. Because to Moshe Rabbeinu, he modeled himself on Hashem's humility. What do we know about Hashem? What does Hashem do? Hashem creates the world. What kind of a world does Hashem create? Sometimes we wonder. It's a world full of a lot of negative things also. A lot of stuff that we would wish that wasn't there. But a lot of things that are quite low. And low creatures. And low things. But Hashem, it's not too low for Hashem to be involved in that. Moshe Rabbeinu, nothing, no person was too low for Moshe Rabbeinu. This is real humility, but it comes from his essence being a humble person. Therefore, it's nothing about him. He doesn't really even exist almost. It's not him. It's all Hashem, the gift from Hashem and what he has to do with it. So now when Miriam is standing there and talking, he has no words come out of his mouth. He's stunned. There's nothing for him to say because it's all from Hashem. And Hashem immediately responds. That's why we have a word that we're going to see next week, Pitay, all of a sudden. Hashem comes quickly to Moshe Rabbeinu's rescue. He doesn't have to say anything because he's the most humble person that ever lived on the face of the earth. Now, this concept of humility that we're told about is, oh, that's good for Moshe Rabbeinu. But no, it is. But the point is that we're meant to learn from it in many ways, that we have to know our strengths. Torah says it's a mitzvah to know your strengths. And strengths don't just mean your talents. Talents is one thing. But even the opportunities that you have. Whatever Hashem gives you, wherever Hashem puts you, whatever Hashem wants from you at that moment, you can do it. It's hard, not easy. No, life is not easy. But we can. And we are given the abilities. And we shouldn't underestimate and not be overly critical. Because sometimes we, oh, look at what I've done to... that's not the way we're meant to think. Look at it honestly. So yeah, we can improve. Improving is always good. But yes, we can respond properly. And we do. And we've done good things. And we will continue to do good things. It's not us. It's Hashem giving us that power. So it's such an important part. And therefore, what that will do is it will help us to relate to every single person. No matter how high we think they are, we won't be intimidated. And no matter how low, we won't feel we are too good for them, so to speak. There's no such thing. We're not too good for anybody. That doesn't exist. Now, just to end off, just a cute thing. There's a very, next week we will continue, because I'm going to see more what happens and what she did and how it describes Moshe, because it's quite an incredible story, such a deep story in such a few pages. Just end off on a sort of lighter note. There's a very beautiful, it's called in Yiddish, the Lange Brief. Lange Brief means the long letter. What's this long letter? The previous Lubavitcher Rebbe was an amazing author. He wrote beautifully, very, very beautifully, very how do you say, not just poetic, more like a very like you could almost picture when you read what he, when you read his writings, you could picture the thing in front of you, all the emotion, all the colors, everything. And at one point he wrote his daughter, the Rebbetzin, who became later the Rebbetzin Chaim Mishka, a letter, a long, long letter. And the letter wasn't a letter like I would write to you, but it was a letter from a Rebbe, even though it was from a father to a daughter. And he was describing chassidim of the olden days, like previous generations, you know, from the beginning of time. In there, there's one very cute story. So there's a story about a man named Reb Mordechai, who originally was not a chassid, had no, there was a time of the Baal Shem Tov, and he wasn't at the beginning aware of the Baal Shem Tov. And it describes as if Mordechai himself is talking. He was a big Talmud Chacham, he knew how to learn. He was a person who did all the right things. For a profession, he was a painter, but he was a very righteous man. And the previous Lubavitcher describes how his mind worked and how he describes himself until he met the Baal Shem Tov, how he felt about himself. And he had a tremendous amount of arrogance because he was very accomplished. He learned a lot. He did a lot of mitzvahs and he did them perfectly. And he felt very proud of himself. And in the story, it describes how one Shabbos, Parshas Baal Yisra, he got the Aliyah to the Torah, the seventh Aliyah, and he reads this pasuk, right? The pasuk says, Moshe was the most humble man that ever lived on the face of the earth. So he's describing how he thought then before he met the Baal Shem Tov. And it bothered him. Why is Moshe the most humble man? I'm also humble. I'm even maybe more humble than Moshe. And it describes how a whole day he's contemplating, what does this mean? How could it be? Maybe Moshe is the most humble man that ever lived on the face of the earth. Maybe Moshe is the most humble man because I am more humble, but later in generations, not that generation. And he still couldn't get to it until he finally says, what does it mean on the face of the earth? It means Moshe is the most humble man that people know about. I'm the most humble man that nobody even knows about. He's laughing at himself afterwards at how his mind was so warped, how he thought what humility was and how he thought about himself until he was enlightened and he met the Baal Shem Tov and he understood what a Jew is, what a neshama is, what God is, and how we really have to look at ourselves and our role in the world. But it's just very cute because it mentions this idea and he says, that's why it says on the face of the earth, yeah, because only the one that people know about. But it's just a very fascinating thing. But we'll leave it over here in Emirat Hashem next week. We'll see a little bit more about, as we say, the uniqueness, Taka, of Moshe Rabbeinu and what happened. Yes.